Hello, friends. Hello, 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 friends.
A tradition unlike any other.
Oh, 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 my goodness. In your life have you seen anything like that?
There it is! Adam Scott, a life changer.
Mashed potato!
Here it comes.
When it comes to footwear on the course, our friends at Cobra Puma Golf are without peer, and they've certainly taken comfort to another level with the new Alpha Cat Nitros. The Alpha Cat Nitros continue to raise the bar in spikeless golf shoe technology, creating a fashion-forward design with exceptional cushioning through its innovative nitro foam material. As worn on tour by our man David Michaluzzi, the Alpha Cat Nitros provide structure and support during both the swing and while walking, with its alpha traction sole worthy of a wide variety of turf and weather conditions. And true to form for all Puma kicks, a unique form stripe external heel counter looks cool and wherever the shoes are worn. The Alpha Cat Nitro shoes are available in 6 different colors in the laced model and 4 colors in the disc model. So for more information on the Nitros or to take a look at these for yourself, visit www.cobragolf.com.
This is the 19th Tee podcast, proudly presented by our friends at Cobra Puma Golf. Just Kieran Marsh with you this week. My good friend Drewster has a bit going on off the course, so to speak. So I'll be guiding you through solo this evening. And really, what an action-packed week. What a time to be in the seat solo. We've got plenty to get through this evening. I'll do my level best to make it as engaging, as entertaining as possible, dribbling on by myself, but lots to get through, not least of which 3 champions out of the weekend's action at the Australian Open at the Australian Golf Club: Joaquin Neiman, Ash Buchheit, and Lockie Wood, the men's, women's, and all abilities Australian Open champions, respectively. We've got a fair bit going on overseas. The Cat was back. Lots of rumors swirling around about John Rahm's future. We've got a universal rollback of the golf ball set to be announced by the USGA and the RNA, and plenty else happening. So, as I said, a long laundry list of things for me to get through this evening. Only one voice you'll hear tonight, other than the ones in your own head. We'll do our level best to keep it brief and cover the main points. Look, we'll start at the Australian Golf Club and with Joaquin Neiman's victory on Sunday afternoon. It was an incredibly impressive run home from Neiman, including a birdie on the final hole in regulation, a 72nd hole, with one of the most ridiculous shots you will see. The approach into the 18th there at the Australian from behind the hospitality tent. I suggest that's probably the best shot we've seen all summer. You'd go a long way to see a better one given the circumstances. He then birdies the first playoff hole and eagles the second playoff hole to win. It's been a remarkable fortnight, really, for a guy who, you know, not all that long ago was number 15 in the world before he made the decision to jump over to LIV. And it's been an indifferent year in 2023 for a guy who was a multiple winner on the PGA Tour, including at Riviera. He came down under searching for some more rankings points to try and jettison himself into a better position on that front. And he finishes 2023 as the winner of the Australian Open and now securing his place in the field at the 152nd Open Championship at Royal Troon. So you'd have to suggest it was a successful trip down to Australia. He was impressive at Royal Queensland the week prior in the PGA Championship and really held his nerve while all around him fell. I mean, we'll go through some names in the leaderboard shortly, but the 35-kilometre-hour winds there at the Australian wreaked absolute havoc on Sunday afternoon, and it was a quality display from Neiman, really, to keep control of his golf ball, say, for that tee shot on the 72nd hole to guide himself home. So a player of immense talent, incredibly exciting player. We saw that not only on his wins in the PGA Tour, but particularly the manner in which he attacked the President's Cup down here in Melbourne in 2019. He's a critical member of that international team, kind of as his star was rising. And it's great to see him back playing some very competitive golf in the past fortnight. So certainly a worthy winner of our Australian Open and joins a list of illustrious names as he becomes the first Chilean to do so. And as I said, importantly, wrapping up his place in the field for the Open Championship next year at Royal Troon. Briefly to the runner-up, and I mean, you want to talk about impressive fortnights. Rikuya Hoshino was second to Minwoo Lee, at the Royal Queensland Golf Club in the Australian PGA, now second to Joaquin Neiman. In doing so, he jumps right out to an early lead in the race to Dubai on the DP World Tour. He also books himself a place in the Open Championship at Royal Troon next year. And I was really glad to see that. Obviously does that by virtue of finishing in the top three of the Australian Open, top three not otherwise exempt, book their place in next year's Open Championship. So he takes that second spot and thoroughly deserved, because, I mean, for all intents and purposes, particularly that incredibly impressive putt on 17 to go equal in the lead, staring in the barrel of a par five, he can probably be pretty disappointed he didn't actually come away with the win. He kept the pressure on Joaquin Neiman through the playoff, particularly sinking that birdie putt on the second playoff hole to force Neiman to drop his eagle to win the tournament. And I really would have been disappointed for him had he not come away with something, because 2 second place finishes is not to be blinked at. But the fact he does secure his spot in the field at next year's Open Championship, I think, is just reward for an excellent fortnight down in Australia. This is a 28-year-old who's won 6 times on the Japanese tour. He's been immense with his irons. He's obviously not the longest player, and I think that was never more evident than when it was mono-e-mono versus Neiman off the tee in those playoff holes. But his pinpoint accuracy with his irons and his putter was rolling both weeks. So it's been a pleasure to have Hoshino involved in these two tournaments. And I think, as I said, a just reward for him to walk away with that place at Royal Troon next year. Certainly deserve to walk away from his time in Australia with something, and he's doing that. Minwoo Lee is outright third. Now, he was already exempt for next year's Open Championship courtesy of his finish at the US Open in 2023, that top five finish, which means his spot goes to Adam Scott, who we'll get to in a moment, for next year's Open Championship. But really, when you think about it, this was a person who we spoke ad nauseum about after last week's win at Royal Queensland. He was searching for an historic double that hadn't been done and remains to be done since 2011 and the great Greg Chalmers. But he was the 54-hole leader. He looked every part the winner, and just probably stumbled a little bit in that final round, provided some immensely exciting moments. That eagle on 18 on Friday from the pine straw, incredible, incredible shot. Again, from the pine straw on 16 on Sunday. The pine straw was seemingly no match for the young Aussie. He was excellent again, and I think that's impressive in and of itself, and the fact that he's 2 strokes back in outright third and knows that he didn't have his best stuff in the final round. So I think he'd be disappointed not to go back-to-back, having given himself a shot. But on balance, the way that he's come home and represented himself, the way that he's captured the imagination, specifically of the golfing public, but I would think more broadly of the Australian sporting public, this fortnight's kind of fell in a neat window of there not being much else on from a broader Australian sporting perspective. And his story has certainly gathered enormous amounts of momentum in the past 2 weeks. So a third place finish is by no means anything to be ashamed of from Minwoo Lee here at the Lakes in the Australian. And he carries with him an enormous amount of confidence, I would think, going into the early part of next year, his first full year on the PGA Tour, having secured that full status for 2024. And I think the sky's the limit. He jumps up, I think, again. So it was 38, the world ranking, after last week's win, and he goes to 35 now, a new all-time high again. And you'd have to think that number will continue to rise. I'd be surprised if he doesn't finish next year, you know, well inside the top 20. And you would expect his stock to continue to soar. He's been excellent, and it's been awesome to have him home and performing well as, I think, an out-and-out star of Australian golf now. Speaking about out-and-stars, a man that's really carried the can for a long time, probably until Cameron Smith really took that baton off him, was Adam Scott, and he wound the clock back. I mean, if there was a story, it was Scotty's charge on Sunday, and if it wasn't for a triple, what was his 16th hole, but it was actually the 7th with him having started on the 10th hole in the final round, which we'll get to that interesting format and some thoughts on that in a moment. But, you know, he had an absolute charge. He was 6 under to that point with 8 birdies and 2 bogeys in his round, and the wheels just fell off with that triple on seven. So disappointing, you know. It's ironic that he finishes three shots back and he has that triple, you know, stumbling across the line to home. And he really wound back the clock, as I said, the momentum that he carried, progressively the support it started to garner as people around the course realized there was something happening here. You know, himself and Lucas Herbert, who only finishes a further stroke back, had a share of the lead at one point. And you could see, it was coming through the broadcast, but the palpable excitement on course at the Australian with two local lads leading at one point, looking likely to have a say down the stretch before some mistakes respectively. But it was awesome to see Scotty. He's been, I mean, he played really well in the PGA in front of a home crowd in Queensland. He carried that form down to Sydney. So credit where it's due. He was excellent and has got off to an awesome start today. So I'm recording Tuesday night. Today was the first day of the Cathedral Invitational at Cathedral Lodge in Victoria. He had 64 and leads the field at 8 under on day one, heading into tomorrow's second and final round. So you'd have to suggest it's been a successful trip home for the evergreen Adam Scott. I'll skip down to Lucas Herbert, outright seventh, as I mentioned, at 10 under. We spoke about Herbie probably twofold in the wrap-up of the PGA and looking forward to this week in terms of his finish in the top 10 last week and having the most bogeys in the field. So the putter certainly was behaving a little more, not entirely, but behaving far more than what it did at Royal Queensland. And just a few errant mistakes, not anything catastrophic. It was just a couple of errant errors here and there on that back nine for him on Sunday that really pushed him out of it. He's only finished four strokes back, and he's even past 72 on the final day, was his worst round. You know, rounds of 68, 69, 66 on Saturday put him in a really strong position. And at times, as I said, he had a joint share of the lead there at one point in the final round. So I think given what he expects of himself now as a top, you know, 80, 90 player in the world and aspirations of climbing further, he would be disappointed to not be taking one of these two trophies home in the past fortnight, but not a bad place to be, as we said. If you're playing that good golf, you had two top 10 finishes on your return home and you're disappointed, I think it's a great place to be. So credit to Herbie. He's done well. The defending champion, as I run through a few other names, Adrian Morant finished in the tie for 8th, the furthest throw back at 9 under. Jason Scrivener, I mentioned him on Saturday afternoon in my review. Good to see him back. He had a 1 under 71 on the final day, which kind of halted his momentum, but a top 10 finish there himself, alongside Alex Fitzpatrick, who was in that final group and had a tough day. He was 3 over 74 by the looks of it there. So that's a tough day for Alex Fitz. Cam Smith, really good to see him there at 7 under. He was not over par for any of his rounds. So 71, 68, 69, 70. He finishes in a tie for 17. Not obviously anything to write home about, but certainly a bounce back from comprehensively missing the cut. And he's himself in a good position, 1 or 2 back from Adam Scott after day one at the Cathedral Invitational, where he was rolling putts from all reports like it was going out of fashion. So unsurprisingly, probably in the more relaxed setting of Cathedral Lodge today without the attention, the focus and being under the microscope, he's found a bit of form, but certainly rounding that way, particularly over the weekend with 69 and 70 at the Aussie. So well done to Smithy having back there. The name below him is what I want to mention, Jasper Stubbs, the obviously reigning Asia Pacific Amateur Champion, having booked his place at Augusta and the Open Championship next year. He's had a cracking week, the highest finishing amateur in a tie for 21st at 6 under with rounds of 69, 70, 71, and 69. Excellent work from young Jasper Stubbs. And I think, obviously it's a big year for him. He'll retain his amateur status. He'll go and play the two biggest tournaments on the international calendar, but he's only going in one direction, his young Stubbs. And he looked really good, not just in patches, I'd say, on the volume of his four rounds to finish at 6 under, as I said, the last amateur he'll be Yeah, he'd be thrilled with that finish. As will Jeffrey Gwan, also finishing at 6 under, and probably a little disappointed, 2 over 73 on the final day, really, is what ruled him out of contention. He was kind of not super close, but he was top 10 going into the final day, was Gwan. He was, what was he there? He was 6 under going into the final day. So certainly within reach, within a shout, and he's had a disappointing 2 over on Sunday. But his past fortnight, well, I kind of said it, I thought last week at the PGA was his best performance professionally since making that decision only a few weeks ago. And this was probably on track to be better, say, for that final round. So really impressive fortnight for Gwan, and I'm sure he enjoyed the opportunity to get back and play in front of family and friends there in Sydney, which was great. Just briefly, a couple of other names. Elvis Smiley had a good week, particularly a strong opening, 368 on the first day. At one point, he got out to 7 under and then kind of came back to the field a little bit there, but he'll be pleased with that, trending in the right direction off the back of the PGA and a tie for 27th. Leish, decent week, not as good as obviously his third place finish there in Queensland, but a tie for 27th himself at 5 under. Matias Sanchez had a really good day on Friday, 467 in trying conditions. He ended up in a tie for 33rd at 4 under. Cam Davis is one I do want to pick out. He was Druids' selection for the tournament, and obviously it was, well, I mean, probably we crowned him a little early. 9 under 63 on the opening day at the Lakes, and then 74 on Friday, 70 on Saturday, and a really disappointing 75 on Sunday. So a little bit of soul searching, no doubt, for Cam Davis. He looked good across both weeks. He looked exceptional in the first round, and he seems like, having gone through a few injury and health concerns in 2023, if the body's right, I expect him to be competitive again on the PGA Tour as he has been in the past next year. So some flashes of brilliance at this tournament, particularly that opening round, without having the ability to finish it off over 4 rounds. But yeah, he was excellent there on Thursday and just kind of withered away a little. That was Druids' selection for this tournament. Mine, in David Michaluzzi, missed the cut, unfortunately, which is tough. Mickham only missed it on the number. He was 1 under the cut at 2 under after the first 2 rounds, but difficult there for Mika, not making the weekend, which is unusual for him. And, you know, we said he was disappointed with his performance at Royal Queensland. I'd suggest doubly so here at the Australian Open, which I think doesn't bode well for his opponents moving forward, because we know anything about Mika, it's that he will take that personally, and he'll be as hard on himself as anyone else. Come back bigger and better, I'm sure. So look, that's the field, really. There's a bunch of guys that didn't make the weekend, who are probably a little disappointed. Hayden Barron, Anthony Quayle, Austin Bautista, a winner already this summer. Kerry Mountcastle, similar, a winner already this summer. Johnny Lawrence, who is competitive up at Royal Queensland. Daniel Hillier, you know, one of the leading players on the European Tour in 2023. Louis Dobler, a lot of guys who would have expected to play the weekend and didn't. Probably don't need to go too far into that. Robbie McIntyre, another one there, finishing a 4 over. He'll be bitterly disappointed, having, you know, not shot the lights out at Royal Queensland either. So he's enjoyed his time. You could see that via his channels down here in Australia, but he'd be bitterly disappointed with that finish there at the Australian. So yeah, a bunch of names you'd expect there probably to play the weekend that didn't. But the ones that did, particularly Joaquin Neiman, were absolute class. And a worthy Australian Open champion. Over on the women's side of the draw, it was back-to-back championships for Ash Buhai. She didn't have it all her own way. In fact, a 4-stroke lead after 54 holes turned into a 1-stroke victory after 72, with our very own Minji Lee charging home to get within one of the eventual champion. 75 on Sunday for Ash Buhai made things a little nervous. But credit where it's due, she did well to steer at home in the final few holes under immense pressure from Minji Lee to secure back-to-back championships. So she's a quality player, Ash Buhai. She's won, you know, obviously this tournament twice. She's won in Europe, one of the states, I believe. And yeah, quite the journeywoman, but a player who, under pressure in these major tournaments, can certainly produce quality rounds. And she did that for the first 3 days and managed to hold on. Credit to Minji Lee. She really lit the course up a fair bit on the final day. And there was a fair bit of momentum. You know, just looking here, she was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 birdies on the front nine, 2 bogeys. So 3 under through the front nine. Things got a little leaky on the back nine, but a further 1, 2, 3 birdies for the first three holes in the back nine before going bogey, par, double, birdie. And then she didn't have another stroke gain through the final four holes. So it was there for her. She just wasn't able to kind of mount that final charge over the final four holes and finishes in outright second. It would have pegged because, ironically, if you look at the way their careers have tracked, obviously she's outrageously successful as a multiple major winner herself, but funnily enough, often when her brother, in the times that her brother has won, she'll often do really well the following week. So something we probably failed to mention last week in the preview, but it would have pegged had she got up for that, just purely based on that quite coincidental twerk of fate, but she couldn't quite mount the charge. Hannah Green finished strongly to end up in a tie for fifth rounds of 71 and 70 over the weekend. Steph Kiriakou, excellent, particularly with the flat stick. She got herself into a tie for fifth as well at 3 under. My selection there, Grace Kim, ended in a tie for seventh, which I'm sure like she'll be happy with in some aspects and quite disappointed with in others, because she would have expected after an outstanding rookie season on the LPGA to come home and probably really push for this, having finished in the top three there last year of this tournament, and particularly in front of family and friends in Sydney. So look, you know, it's a top 10 finish. It's a top 7 finish. It's a really good effort. Finishes one ahead of Gabby Ruffles, in outright ninth, and then in outright 10th was Druids' selection, Karis Davison, who finished at 1 over par, a stroke ahead of Cassie Porter. So, you know, really strong local contingent for the Aussies through that kind of first 10 or 11. But Ash Buhai, the South African and defending champion, gets it done again for the women's. And then in the All Abilities Championship, which wrapped up on the Saturday, it was the Queenslander, Lockie Wood, who got the job done. Rounds of 71, 72, and 70 put him at even par, the only player not over par in the field. It's a great story, Lockie Wood. He was a victim of a horrific accident. You know, lost the lower part of one of his legs, and talks about how golf really saved him. He was in a really low point of his life, very promising junior player. And I think it's unimaginable what he went through, and none of us can really speak to it, having not suffered that sort of trauma previously. But I just think it's so important to see how much this meant to him and how golf had kind of been his savior in many respects. And I think that was a touching moment. It was obviously great to have a local winner of this, because there was plenty of international raiders, not least of which the defending champion Kit Poppett, who finished in outright fourth, and my selection with Brendan Lawler, who finished 3 strokes back of Lockie Wood, the Irishman, in outright second. But it was awesome to see Lockie Wood lift that trophy on Saturday and then have the ability to kind of walk the course on Sunday, and I suppose be applauded and you know, shown the adoration of a home champion, which was awesome to see. So congratulations to Lockie Wood. And that kind of speaks to our three champions. I just do want to take a moment, probably talk about a few things. I thought the courses themselves, the Aussies certainly the more difficult of the two courses through the first 2 days. The conditioning was immaculate on both courses, and the Australian presented a true test across the weekend as those winds started to pick up, 35 kilometres an hour, as I mentioned, on the Sunday, which really made the run home quite interesting in both sides of the draw, the men's and women's. Obviously a playoff on the men's side, and then Ash Buhai getting up by the 1 stroke on the women's side. Credit to the ground staff at both courses, but particularly the Australian, you know, putting up with 4 rounds and a huge amount of foot traffic I think it was north of 30 or 40,000 people through the gates across all 4 days, which was awesome to see. Probably neatly pivots into my second point. The crowds in Sydney were exceptional. And I think this just goes to prove what we've been saying for some time, in the sense of if you build it, they will come. And it's credit where it's due. It's been the same last week at Royal Queensland. It was exceptionally well attended. This week in Sydney, even better. And of course, we've seen the success of the LIV tournament in Adelaide, which was outrageous in terms of its numbers. There is a thirst for this game. It's born out of, you know, a variety of different pockets of the golfing community, whether you're a rusted on fan, whether you're someone who's discovered the game during COVID through a lack of options and like the rest of us caught the bug. There are so many different ways you can get to this point. The funnel is large at the top, but ultimately what it leads to a crowd like we saw on the weekend at the Australian, that was awesome. And the amount of overseas players I've seen kind of posting about it and sharing that through their socials and talking about, I suppose, how blown away they were by the level of engagement of the Australian fans and the passion and the knowledge, you know, speaks volumes of how important it is to have these tournaments down here in Australia and how important it is when they're here for us to get out there. So if you're part of that crowd in Sydney, credit to you. You were treated to some wonderful golf. Not so much on the broadcast for us, and I don't want to labour the point here. I don't spend too long on it, and I want to make it really clear that this is not a reflection on the broadcast team. So, you know, the likes of our good mate Ewan Porter, Paul Gow, Stacey Peters, Nico Hearn, these guys were all excellent in their ability to tell the stories. I think where we are let down in this country as it relates to coverage of golf tournaments is the investment in the actual technology. There were multiple occasions where ball tracking was an issue. There were multiple occasions where, most likely through a lack of cameras, in terms of volume of cameras on the ground at the course, we were just missing things. We had overlay packages running of interviews with players while we had significant effects on the leaderboard happening that we didn't see, and we might catch up later. We don't see at all. Some really shoddy camera work following guys, you know, in the trees, in the bushes and around traps and hazards. And I felt like they struggled a lot. And it wasn't an easy setting, the 18th hole at the Australian, with, you know, the grandstands and the water, but they really struggled to get that shot right across the weekend, particularly, you know, when it mattered on those championship holes. So, again, not a criticism of the people in the position and in the chair describing and telling us the story, because I think the commentators themselves did an excellent job, but there's got to be a better investment, must be a better investment in the infrastructure we put around the broadcast, because the people at home didn't get the experience that the people attending did. And that's not only reflective of us here in Australia watching on, it's reflective of the people overseas watching on. And that's an indictment and a poor advertisement for what should be a wonderful, wonderful flag waving opportunity for Australian golf. Dare I contrast it? It's not the same with LIV. The LIV Golf Adelaide broadcast was excellent, and that's because they pour money into it. They had bucket loads of cameras on the ground, all angles covered, people behind from a production standpoint with knowledge, with experience, knowing what they're doing. I think it was obvious where the pitfalls were from a broadcast perspective on the weekend, and that's something we really need to see addressed moving forward, because we can't have our flagship tournaments, whether it was last week at Royal Queensland, this week at the Lakes and at the Australian, we can't have our flagship tournaments falling behind from a broadcast perspective. It's just not acceptable. And the fans of the game watching on from home who aren't fortunate enough to be there in Sydney over the weekend deserve better. So, as I said, don't labour too much on it, but it needed to be said because there's been an awful lot of feedback online about that. Just finally, as it relates to the Australian Open on the format, so there's a lot of questions asked about the format of this tournament in terms of having all three fields play at the same time. Now, I've probably been in the past, particularly last year when it was down in Victoria, erred more towards the side of this is a wonderful exhibition. This is something that doesn't happen anywhere else in the world, and we should be really proud of the fact that our game in this country is leading the way. probably have tipped the other way this year. And look, I don't think I don't think there's much wrong, but I think for a few small reasons, in my opinion, the way forward is to have the women's stand alone and the men's and the All Abilities played at the same time. So I don't want to take away the important representation of having the All Abilities guys playing at the same time as the men's provides. Like, that's really important and really well articulated, if you'll indulge me for a moment, by Brendan Lawler, the Irishman, who finished in outright second. There's a quote here from him saying, "We're playing at the very same time as the main guys. We have full access to player lounges, practice rounds. When the guys market All Abilities, all inclusive, that's exactly what it is. And it's a joy for me to come back here. Hopefully I'll be coming back here in 20 years, still playing All Abilities if I can. It's incredible." That can't be undersold. The representation is incredibly important, not least of which for the current guys on the All Abilities Tour, but for young junior All Abilities golfers, for them to see there is a genuine pathway, for them to see that they are treated equally, for them to see that the game, not only at the grassroots level, but at the professional level, is inclusive. It's really important to have the representation and that All Abilities Championship played in the same field. I think they managed it really well this year, finishing it up on the Saturday and then not running into traffic issues on the Sunday. I also think there should be a women's All Abilities field that plays alongside the women's Australian Open, but I genuinely do believe now that the women's and the men's should be standalone. And that's not just to avoid traffic concerns, because there's a variety of reasons why I think there were missed opportunities on Sunday, so to speak. So Adam Scott, let me lead there. His charge is happening on the front nine. It was odd. We had a guy in genuine contention for the tournament who lit his opening nine up, but was all out of sorts in terms of trying to follow it if you're on the ground from a crowd perspective, because he's teeing off on 10 and finishing on nine as his 18th. You know, it didn't make much sense to me. There was a great tweet by James Marcazzani, one of the tour players, who said, "Spare a thought for the lads off at 105 on the 10th who start the day at 4 under, 6.5 hours after players at 3 under start their rounds and 16 minutes after the lead group tees off." That was on Saturday. So just let me read that again. "Spare a thought for the lads off at 1:05 p.m. on the 10th who start the day at 4 under. This is on Saturday. Starting 6.5 hours after players just a stroke back at 3 under who started their rounds and 16 minutes after the lead group tees off." And then the following day, he followed up on the Adam Scott point. "Adam Scott tied for the lead through 12 holes in the final round. He's playing the par 3 fourth. The last lead group is on the 5th green." It was just, from a scheduling perspective, from a narrative perspective on the men's side, it was all over the place. And that's because there were considerations that had to be made to fit everything in. Now, similarly on the women's side, Minji Lee is tearing up her final round. She's making a genuine charge as Ash Buhai comes back to the field. And it was lost in the day because it's trying to compete with a whole other field and a whole other tournament. And Minji Lee, had she have got up, would have been muted celebrations because she had to clear the green for the final three men's groups coming behind her, approaching, including a brother, by the way, approaching the 18th. Her moment, Ash Buhai's moment, to be fair, I'm speaking through, you know, green and gold colored glasses, saying it would have been a missed opportunity with Minji Lee having missed out. Ash Buhai's moment was muted for the very same reason. So I'm of genuine belief now that these two tournaments need to be separate. As I said, I think it's important that the All Abilities tournament stays playing at the same time as the men's. I just think it's important as well that there's a women's All Abilities tournament offer, but as it relates to the men's and women's Australian Open, they need to find an opportunity to separate them on the calendar moving forward for the benefit of both tournaments, not of the men's over the women's. It's not the suggestion here. This is for the benefit of both tournaments and their requirement, I think, and the fact that they deserve to stand on their own and be celebrated accordingly. We'll see what happens. I'm not holding my breath. Victoria have gone in big time in terms of the state of Victoria to bring this back. despite the wonderful crowds in Sydney, despite the outstanding broadcast figures, it's a tournament for sale because nothing's locked in for next year. The Victorian government have seen the success that's been had at the Lakes and the Australian over the weekend. They want that back. Last year, it was Kingston Heath and the Victoria Golf Club, the first trial of this format. I wonder if they'll see an opportunity to bring it back and learn from those errors that were made. I think it improved out of sight this year, but I just do think there's a real opportunity to make it as good a product as it can be by splitting out those two tournaments. So we'll see what happens. As I mentioned, things have moved on quickly. The players, well, a select group of players have headed down to Victoria for the Cathedral Invitational at the Cathedral Lodge and Golf Club. If you remember last year, this time last year, we had a chat with David Evans, who owns the Cathedral Lodge, and he is the tournament founder of the Cathedral Invitational. He was playing today alongside Adam Scott. You'll remember from our conversation last year, it's a two-round tournament. The first round is a member pro-am, so it's a private club, the Cathedral Lodge, and the members are paired with the pros, and they play the member pro-am on the first day, and then tomorrow is just the pros, and the gates open for members of the public to go in and watch. So Adam Scott off to an absolute flyer. He's 64, 8 under today, one stroke clear of Cameron Smith in second. And Jeffrey Guan talked about how good his fortnight's been. Well, it's continued. 6 under 66 and a tie for third alongside Jeff Ogilvy. Jasper Stubbs, the low amateur at the Australian Open, is off to a flyer himself, tied for fifth with a 5 under 67 alongside Benny Eccles, who's sitting second in the order of merit on the PGA Tour of Australasia after an outstanding start to the summer. Karis Davidson, the young Queenslander, is up there at 567, as is Jared Felton, our man, the wizard, Justin Warren, Gailey, Darcy Brereton, and Gabby Ruffles round out the large group at T5. And the list goes on. Others in the field include Kazuma Kabori, the impressive young New Zealand pro. Leash is down there. Maddie Griffin, Grace Kim, Jake McLeod, Matty Yeager, the former tour player who is the tournament director at Cathedral, Jack Thompson, Elvis Smiley, Cassie Porter, Blake Windred. It's a stacked, stacked field. So keep an eye on that. It's not broadcast tomorrow. They are taking a video package, which I understand is going to actually be broadcast on Christmas Eve via Channel 9, I believe. So there'll be a kind of a highlights, probably 2-3 hour highlights package broadcast on Christmas Eve. But follow along the tour's social channels and also that of Cathedral Invitational. Their Instagram and Twitter was working overtime today to keep people updated. And you can keep an eye on that with Scotty taking a one-stroke lead into tomorrow's second and final round. And then there's another tournament coming up in Australia, the last officially of the year. Now, it's not a tour-sanctioned tournament, but it is going to be well-attended, and that is the Sandbelt Invitational for 2023, played across December 11, 12, 13, and 14. Four rounds showcasing one of, if not the best golfing region in the world. So round one at the Victoria Golf Club, round two at Peninsula Kingswood, round three at Yarra Yarra. It gets introduced for the first time in this tournament, the Sandbelt Invitational, and then it rounds off at Royal Melbourne, I believe the East Course at Royal Melbourne as well, the lesser seen but equally as impressive East Course at Royal Melbourne will play host to round four. So this, of course, is the brainchild of Jeff Ogilvy and our good friend Mike Clayton. Last year was a cracker year. Momoka Kabori, Kazuma's sister, won the women's. Cam Davis won the men's. Amelia Harris, the incredibly impressive 15-year-old Victorian, won the women's. Connor McDade won the amateur men's. So they're the defending champions. It's another cracking field this year, as I'm just trying to pull up to see if I can grab the names. I know Cam Davis has gone back to defend his title. We'll just see. I've got a list here as well. Nico Kolsarts is in the field. He's also playing Cathedral this week, but he is backing up there at the Sandbelt Invitational. I know Justice Bozio is, after an incredibly impressive week herself recently there at the Women's Australian Open. So, yeah, cracking field. Kazuma Kabori is in as well. John Murphy, the Australian as I said, Cam Davis going back to defend his title. So the Sandbelt Invitational, if you're in Victoria, you shouldn't need to be told. It's an outstanding tournament. As I said, incredibly fortunate, really, that you can get, you know, within 5 or 6 feet, walk the fairways and get that close to some of the best players in Australian. And, you know, in the case of Cam Davis, one of the better up-and-coming players in the PGA Tour play, and we speak with bias, but arguably, if not the best, golfing region in the world. So PK Peninsula Kingswood, Victoria, Yarra Yarra, and finishing off the East Course of Royal Melbourne. If you're down in Victoria, you do your absolute level best to get out to one or even all four of those rounds, December 11, 12, 13, and 14. It will be a cracking finish to the first half of the Australasian summer. A little bit else rolling around, as I kind of played at the start. Plenty happening this week, and I'm conscious that you've been listening to me rattle on for a period of time now, but it is important, I think, just to run through a few bits of news. So, briefly overseas, big congratulations to our good friend Aaron Wilkin, along with Dayan Lawson, who've both finished in the top 10 of the Asian Development Tour Order of Merit, and in doing so, have secured their full tour cards for next year's Asian Tour season. So, Silky, as he's now known, and Digger, as Dayan Lawson has always been known, will have their full status on the Asian Tour courtesy of that top 10 finish on the Development Tour. So congratulations to Silky and Digger. And then in the LPGA Q Series, this is kind of a similar setup to the European Tour or DP World Tour Q School that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. 6 grueling rounds. This is at the Robert Trent Jones Trail at Magnolia Grove. For the women, this is for the final few places on next year's LPGA Tour. Plenty entered the field. It will be top 45 and ties earning 2024 LPGA Tour status. From an Australian perspective, it's excellent news so far because Robin Choi has had back-to-back 64s in the third and fourth round to currently sit 3 clear at the top, 21 under after 4 rounds. 21 under after 4 rounds, to give you context, she's outright first, as I said, with a 3-stroke lead. The top 45 goes down to 6 under, so she's got 15 strokes to play with. You would think she's looking pretty good with 2 rounds remaining, particularly with back-to-back 64s, so we'll keep an eye, monitor an update on that. But Robin Choi currently leading the way in the LPGA Q Series with 2 rounds remaining there in Alabama. Speaking of Aussies, there's plenty heading to the Live Tour promotional event. So 3 places on offer for next year's Live Tour, courtesy of the 2 rounds of this promotional event. It's over in Jeddah or King Abdullah Economic City in Saudi Arabia. And sorry, no, it's not. It's in Abu Dhabi, I believe, is where it actually is. I shouldn't joke, but of course, Liv's backing and heart and soul is out of Saudi Arabia. It is, in fact, as I said, in Abu Dhabi. It is the Live Golf Promotions Qualifier in Abu Dhabi. A couple of rounds. The December 8 to 10 event. So getting underway at the back end of this week, there are 11 Aussies involved in a larger field looking for those 3 places on offer. As I said, there's 9 Aussies involved in the opening round. So courtesy their involvement in LIV this year, both Jed Morgan and Wade Ormsby have been given an exemption through the second round of this event. But a further 9 Aussies have traveled to Abu Dhabi to compete in the first round, trying to advance to the second and ultimately secure one of those 3 places. Those 9 Aussies are Lachlan Barker, Austin Batista, a winner already this summer, Andrew Doat, Scott Henn, Brendan Jones, Big Zach Murray. Ryan Ruffles is an interesting name in amongst this list. Travis Smythe, who was down here for the Australian Open just this week, and of course a prominent player on the Asian Tour, and Kevin Wahn out of Melbourne. So those nine Aussies again: Lachlan Barker, Austin Bautista, Andrew Doat, Scott Henn, Brendan Jones, Zach Murray, Ryan Ruffles, Travis Smythe, and Kevin Wahn. We'll see how many of them join Jed Morgan and Wade Ormsby in the second round, but we'll keep a close eye on that. Just a reminder, it is a large field at the promotions qualifier. First round has 59 players. Top 20 players after the first round advance to the second round. Scores are reset, and then the top 20 advance to a 36-hole shootout on the last day. Quite incredible. Three spots on offer for next year's LIV Golf Tour. A very lucrative opportunity if you can get your place in the field. It's anyone's game with those small 48-man fields, 54 holes, and some big cash on offer. So I'm not surprised to see a bunch of Aussies throwing their hat in the ring to try and secure one of those three places. We wish all 11 the very best of luck. We'll keep an eye on that. An update accordingly. Speaking of LIV, goodness me, there's been some rumours swirling about. It's gained a lot of pace. And to be fair, I think John Rahm has been a player probably rumoured for some time. He has, on each of those occasions, been quick to quash those rumours and through a variety of very strong and supportive statements related to the PGA Tour, at one stage pledging his fealty to the tour moving forward. The rumours have gained significant momentum in the past week, and Rahm's silence is deafening comparatively to the past, where he's been quick to dispel these rumours. So to be very clear, nothing confirmed out of the Rahm camp by Rahm, by his management, by his cleaner, by his pool guy. No one around Rahm is speaking. Not a word has come out, which in and of itself may be telling, and he will speak ultimately when he's ready to. But there are significant rumours, and where there's smoke, there is often fire. Talk about $300 million signing bonus, the ability to earn up to $600 million through things like equity and team ownership, etc. It's a massive story, and you would have to think comfortably the biggest scalp if they can get it across the line. You'd have to think it gives cover to a number of other guys from the PGA Tour who probably have hesitated to jump, but given Rahm has gone, could do so if that's the case. You look at guys like Patrick Cantlay, you've got guys like Xander Schauffele. There's even been in the last 24 hours a little bit of conjecture around Jason Day's future. Whether he may be part of an exodus off the back of Rahm if that goes ahead. It would change the nature of the conversation. It would completely legitimize that tour, the defending Masters champion, a US Open champion, really, outside of Rory, the heart and soul of the European Ryder Cup team, and in many respects, the face of continental European golf. We can't really say either way yet, because as I said, no official word out of the Rahm camp, but it would be an enormous story, and not least of which because of what it would represent, but really because of his very strong comments previously as it relates to the LIV Tour. So watch this space. And just finally, I'm sure you're all very relieved I've led with those words before this last sentence. The Cat is back. Tiger Woods made his return to competitive golf at his own tournament, the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas. This is a limited player field. There is no cut. It's ridiculous, really, the amount of money on offer, the fact that world rankings points are offered here. So we're not going to get bogged down in the tournament or the fact that Scottie Scheffler was a three-stroke winner at 20 under. We're going to talk about the fact that Tiger made his return. Finished even par. He started with a 75, which looked rough, but then went 70, 71, 72. Most importantly, completed 4 days of golf. More importantly, didn't look to be in any significant pain. In fact, he looked pretty jacked. I think he spent most of the time in the gym that we haven't seen him in the better part of a year. He looks exceptionally in good nick. And has essentially said his plan at this stage is to play once a month, which is remarkable given what we saw, at the Masters not all that long ago, limping around Augusta National in significant pain, given what we saw, that engrossing, strive for the cut at Riviera. Like, all these things looked like and felt like the last time we might ever see him play. And he's gone away. He's had yet another operation, gone through a significant rehab, and has come off the back of it suggesting that I'm comfortable to play once a month moving forward, which would be a remarkable change of fortunes, but also incredibly fortunate for the broader golfing community. So it will be interesting to see how realistic that is when he gets maybe two or three tournaments into that swing. And no doubt he'll target things like the Masters and the Open Championship as a priority alongside his own tournaments like Riviera, the Hero that we've just had. But if we can get him back for even once every 2 months, it would be incredibly, incredibly fortunate for all of us as golf fans. So it's great to see him back. In that tournament as well, Colin Morikawa was assessed a two-stroke penalty for using green reading materials, reported by Matt Fitzpatrick. And to Matt Fitzpatrick, I say, good on you protecting the field. There's been a few people going after Fitzy for this, but no, stuff that, Fitzy. Purely can't Fitzy here on the 19th Tee podcast. You've got to protect the sanctity and integrity of the game. And Colin Morikawa was incredibly whiny off the back of that two-stroke penalty and how it was administered and how it was communicated to him. Maybe just don't break the rules, Colin. Pretty bloody simple. I know I said just finally before, but very, very finally, because the details are yet to be revealed, but reports that later this week, and by the time you hear this, maybe it'll already be announced, that the USGA and the RNA, as the two guardians of the laws of the game, are set to announce a universal rollback of the golf ball. So what started probably 6 months ago as a suggestion of bifurcation in terms of one ball for the pros and one ball for the rest of us, now probably as a direct result of the amount of conjecture and misinformation and propaganda spread by the equipment companies, has turned into a universal golf ball rollback for all, or at least a proposed one by the two governing bodies of the game. It's a little way away. I don't think it's proposed to be until 2026. And again, it hasn't been officially announced, but strong reporting that that announcement will come with details from the dual governing bodies middle of the week. So when we have more information on that, we'll obviously share it. But it will be a significant one because the ball you are using right now, if this is to go through, will be non-compliant, non-conforming by 2026. So it's going to affect literally everybody who steps onto a golf course, which is quite remarkable given where we started in terms of the suggestion of bifurcation not all that long ago. That'll do us. It's been enormous. Three championships at the Australian Open, the Cathedral Invitational, the Sandhurst Invitational, 11 Aussies at LIV, Robin Choi at the LPGAQ Series, John Rahm potentially to LIV, Tiger's back, the rollback, covered a fair bit of ground. And I appreciate your patience having done it all with one voice. My mate is temporarily sidelined with a few things going on off the course, but it's been a pleasure to be in your ears and have your company. We will likely have one or two more before the end of the year and then go on a bit of a break. Obviously, as I said, Cathedral Invitational this week, Sandbelt Invitational next week, and then the tour doesn't return until mid-January. So we will take probably a little break there over the Christmas New Year period and then return just before the tour does. Some exciting interviews coming your way. Looks like we'll have Stephen May back, the Melbourne Demons Premiership defender and absolute golf nut. Looks like we'll have Johnny Millman, similarly a golf nut, Millmania, ahead of his final Australian summer of tennis. He's hanging up the racket after the Australian Open in Melbourne. He loves his golf, adores his golf, and Johnny Millman will be a guest shortly. Matt Denny, the bare-chested Australian discus thrower who captured our hearts in Tokyo and hopefully will do so again in Paris at next year's Olympics. He hits as big a ball as he throws a discus, loves his golf. Matt Denny will be a guest moving forward, hopefully catching up with a number of the Aussies who are home over the summer. Grace Kim will be coming back on. Steph Kiriakou will be coming back on, amongst others. And there's looking like a stats and data podcast coming your way, which will be music to Drew's ears. So look, there's plenty happening and plenty in the works. I'm grateful that you've bed with us this week with one individual voice. Hopefully we'll return to normal programming as of next week and some exciting stuff coming down the pipeline. Give us a follow on the socials at the 19th Tee podcast on the gram, in particular where we're most active. Have a look at the shop via the link there. Still some sporadic merchandise available. Make sure you as well, if you're in the market for clubs, clothes, shoes, you're checking out our great friends at Cobra Puma Golf. It's cobrapumagolf.com. Wonderful presenting partners of this here podcast. Jump on Spotify, Apple, subscribe, rate, give us some feedback. Help us put this podcast in front of as many people as humanly possible. We're loving the engagement we've had across the Australian summer, as we always do. And continue to look to grow that audience because we're nothing without you guys. We love your support. We appreciate it greatly. And don't take for granted the opportunity to talk to you on a weekly basis. Thanks for your patience with me this week. Hopefully it hasn't been too painful. Thanks for your engagement and support of Australian golf across this past fortnight. It's been a wonderful advertisement for the game, wonderful advertisement for what it means to this golfing community in Australia. And hopefully that is something that will only continue to grow.